Mum cuts Jack a huge chunk of quiche and adds a slice of tomato. "So, Jack," she says sympathetically as she hands him a paper plate, "are you getting by financially?"
"I'm doing okay."
"You want some free career advice, Jack?" says Kerry, munching a piece of chicken.
"Now, you want to listen to Kerry," puts in Dad. "She's our star. She has her own company."
"Is that so?" says Jack.
"Office furniture supply," says Kerry. "Started from scratch. Now we have 40 staff and a turnover of just over 2 million. And you know what my secret is?"
"I have no idea," says Jack.
Kerry leans forward and fixes him with her blue eyes.
"Golf?"
"Golf?" says Jack after a pause.
"Business is all about networking," says Kerry. "It's all about contacts. I'm telling you, Jack, I've met most of the top business people in the country on the golf course. Take any company, take this company." She spreads her arm around the scene. "I know the top guy here. I could call him up tomorrow if I wanted to." I'm frozen in horror.
"Really?" says Jack, sounding riveted. "Is that so?"
"Oh, yes," she leans forward confidentially. "And I mean the top guy."
"The top guy," echoes Jack. "I'm impressed."
"Perhaps Kerry could put in a good word for you, Jack," exclaims Mum in sudden inspiration. "You'd do that, wouldn't you, Kerry, love?" I would burst into hysterical laughter if the situation weren't so completely and utterly hideous.
"Mr. Harper?"
A voice suddenly interrupts and I breathe a sigh of relief. We all look up to see Cyril bending awkwardly down to Jack.
"I'm extremely sorry to interrupt, sir," he says, glancing around at my family as though trying to discern any reason at all why Jack Harper might be having a picnic with us. "But Malcolm St. John is here and would like a very brief word."
"Of course," says Jack and smiles politely at Mum. "If you could just excuse me a moment."
As he carefully balances his glass on his plate and gets to his feet, the whole family exchanges confused glances.
"Giving him a second chance, then," calls out Dad to Cyril.
"I'm sorry," says Cyril, taking a couple of steps toward us.
"That chap, Jack," says Dad, gesturing to Jack, who's talking to a guy dressed in a navy blazer. "You're thinking of taking him on again, are you?"
Cyril looks stiffly from Dad to me and back again.
"It's okay, Cyril," I call lightly.
"Dad, shut up, okay?" I mutter. "He owns the company."
"What?"
Everyone turns to face me.
"Jack's one of the founders of the Panther Corporation," I hiss. "He was just trying to be modest."
"Are you saying that guy is Jack Harper?"
says Nev in disbelief.
"Yes."
There's a flabbergasted silence. As I look around, I see that a piece of chicken drumstick has fallen out of Kerry's mouth.
"Jack Harper, the multimillionaire," says Dad, just to make sure.
"So how the hell do you know Jack Harper?"
says Nev.
I just know him."
I colour a little. "We've worked together and stuff, and he's kind of become a friend. But listen, don't do anything differently," I say. Jack has just shaken the hand of the blazer guy and is coming back toward the picnic rug. "Just act the way you were before."
"Oh, God, why am I even bothering?"
As Jack approaches, my entire family is sitting bolt upright, awestruck.
"So, Jack," says Dad, sounding self-conscious, "have another drink. Is this wine all right for you? Because we can easily nip to the wine shop, get something with a proper vintage."
"Jack, what else can I get you to eat?" says Mum. "I've got some gourmet salmon rolls somewhere. Emma, give Jack your plate. He can't eat off paper."
"So, Jack," says Nev in a matey voice, "what does a guy like you drive then? No, don't tell me."
He lifts his hand. "A Porsche. Am I right?"
Jack looks at me with a quizzical expression, and I gaze back beseechingly,
trying to convey that I'm really sorry, that basically I want to die.
I take it my cover's been blown, he says with a grin.
Jack, exclaims Kerry, who has totally regained her composure. She gives him an ingratiating smile and thrusts out her hand. It's good to meet you.
Absolutely, says Jack. Although, didn't we just meet?
As professionals, says Kerry smoothly. One business owner to another. Here's my card, and if you ever need any help with your office furniture requirements, please give me a call. Or if you wanted to meet up socially, perhaps the four of us could go out sometime. Play around, couldn't we, Emma?
What?
Since when have Kerry and I ever socialized together? Emma and I are practically sisters, of course, she adds in sweet tones, putting her arm around me. I'm sure she's told you.
Oh, she told me a few things, says Jack.
He takes a bite of roast chicken. We couldn't be closer, could we, Ems? Jack reaches for his glass, takes a sip, then looks up.
So, I guess that must have been a pretty tough decision for you when you had to turn Emma down, you two being so close and all.
Turn her down? Kerry gives a tinkling little laugh. I don't know what on earth you...
That time she applied for work experience in your firm, and you turned her down, says Jack, and takes another bite of chicken.
That was a secret. That was supposed to be a secret.
What? Says Dad, half laughing. Emma applied to Kerry.
I don't know what you're talking about, says Kerry, going a little pink.
I think I have this right, says Jack. She offered to work for no money. But you still said no? He looks thoughtful for a moment. Interesting decision.
No one speaks. Dad's jocular smile is slowly fading.
But of course, fortunate for us here at the Panther Corporation, we're very glad Emma didn't make a career in the office furniture industry. So, I guess I have to thank you, Kerry, as one business owner to another. You did us a big favor.
Kerry is completely puce.
Kerry, is this true? Says Mum. You wouldn't help Emma when she asked.
You never told us about this, Emma. Dad looks completely taken aback. I was embarrassed, okay?
Bit cheeky of Emma to ask, says Nev, taking a huge bite of pork pie. Using family connections, that's what you said, wasn't it, Kerry?
Cheeky? Echoes Mum in disbelief. Kerry, we lent you the money to start that company. You wouldn't have a company without this family. It wasn't like that, says Kerry, darting an annoyed look at Nev. There's been a crossed wire. Some confusion. She pats her wig and gives me an ingratiating smile. Obviously, I'd be delighted to help you with your career, Ems. You should have said before. Just call me at the office. I'll do anything I can.
I gaze back at her, full of sudden loathing. I cannot believe she is trying to wriggle out of this. She is the most two-faced cow in the entire world.
There's no crossed wire, Kerry, I say. We both know exactly what happened. I asked you for help and you wouldn't give it to me. And fine, it's your company. And it was your decision and you had every right to make it, but don't try to say it didn't happen because it did.
Emma? Says Kerry, trying to reach for my hand. Silly girl, I had no idea. If I'd known it was important,
I jerk my hand away. I can feel all the old hurt and humiliation building up inside me, rising like hot water inside a pipe, until suddenly the pressure is unbearable.
Yes, you did, I hear myself exclaiming. You knew exactly what you were doing. You knew how desperate I was. Ever since you arrived in this family, you've tried to squash me down. You tease me about my crap career. You boast about yourself. I spend my entire life feeling small and stupid. Well, fine. You win, Kerry. You're the star and I'm not. You're the success and I'm the failure. But just don't pretend to be my best friend, okay? Because you're not and you never will be.
I finish and look at her gobsmacked face. I have a horrible feeling I might burst into tears any moment. I meet Jack's eye and he gives me a way to go smile. Then I risk a glance at Mum and Dad. They're both looking paralysed, like they don't know what on earth to do. The thing is, our family just doesn't do loud emotional outbursts. In fact, I'm not entirely sure what to do next myself. So, I'll be going then, I say. I'll be off. Come on, Jack. We've got work to do. Somehow, Jack and I make it into the house and up the stairs. He leads me along a corridor, produces a key, and opens a door. And we're in a room. A large, light, cream-coloured room with a big double bed in it. The door closes, and all my nerves return in a whoosh. This is it. Finally, this is it. Jack and me, alone in a room. With a bed. My ribcage is rising and falling. Blood is beating in my ears. Then he bends forward and kisses me. His mouth is opening mine, and he's already tugging the elastic sleeves of my snow-white costume down off my shoulders and unhooking my bra. I'm fumbling for his shirt buttons. His mouth reaches my nipple, and I'm starting to gasp with excitement when he pulls me down onto the sun-warmed carpet. Oh my God, this is quick. He's ripping off my knickers. His hands are... his fingers are... I'm panting helplessly. We're going so fast I can barely register what's happening. This is nothing like Connor. This is nothing like I've ever... A minute ago I was standing at the door fully clothed, and now I'm already... He's already... I'm in love. I, Emma Corrigan, am in love. For the first time in my entire life, I'm totally 100% in love. I spent all night with Jack at the Panther Mansion. I woke up in his arms. We had sex about 95 times, and it was just perfect. But it's not just the sex. It's everything. It's the way he had a cup of tea waiting for me when I woke up. It's the way he turned on his laptop especially for me to look up all my internet horoscopes and helped me choose the best one. He knows all the crappy, embarrassing bits about me that I normally tried to hide from any man for as long as possible. And he loves me anyway. So he didn't exactly say he loved me, but he said something even better. I still keep rolling it blissfully around my head. We were lying there idly this morning when I said, without quite intending to, Jack, how come you remembered about Kerry turning me down for work experience? And not just that, every single thing I told you on that plane, every little detail about work, about my family, about Connor, everything. You remember it all, and I just don't get it. What don't you get? Said Jack. I don't get why someone like you would be interested in my stupid, boring little life, I said, my cheeks prickling with embarrassment. Emma, your life is not stupid and boring. Of course it is. I never do anything exciting. I haven't got my own company or invented anything. You have friends who love you and whom you love, Jack said. You have ambitions. You have fun. You have imagination and optimism. You have warmth. He studied my face for a few moments. Emma, you want to know why I remember all your secrets? The minute you started talking on that plane, I was gripped.
You were gripped? By me?
I was gripped, he repeated gently, and he leaned over and kissed me. And the point is, if I'd never spoken to him on that plane, and if I'd never blurted out my stuff, then this would never have happened. We would never have found each other. It was fate. I was meant to get on that plane. I was meant to get upgraded. I was meant to spill my secrets. I float up the stairs and unlock the door of our flat.
Lissy, I call. Lissy, I'm in love.
There is no reply, and I feel a twinge of disappointment. I wanted someone to talk to. Suddenly, there's a thumping sound from her room, I stand completely still in the hallway, transfixed. The mysterious thumping sounds. There's another one. Then two more. What on earth? And then I see it, through the door of the sitting room, on the floor next to the sofa. A briefcase. A black leather briefcase. It's him. It's that Jean-Paul guy. He's in there. Right this minute. I take a few steps forward, completely intrigued. A little thought occurs to me. Okay, suppose I hadn't seen the briefcase. Suppose I'd just innocently walked into the flat and happened to go straight to Lissy's door and happened to open it. Nobody could blame me then, could they? It would just be an honest mistake. I arrive at her door and knock softly. There's no response from inside. The thumping noises have stopped. As I face the painted wood, I feel a sudden apprehension. I grasp the handle, open the door, and give a scream of terror. The image is so startling. I can't make sense of it. Lissy's naked on the floor. They're both naked. She and the guy are kind of tangled together in the strangest position I've ever. Her legs are up in the air, and his are twisted around her, and they're both scarlet in the face and panting. I'm sorry. God, I'm sorry. Emma, wait! I hear Lissy shout as I scuttle away to my room, slam the door and fall onto my bed. She was telling the truth. They were having sex. But I mean, what kind of weird, contorted sex was that? Bloody hell. I feel a hand on my shoulder and scream again. Emma, calm down, says Lissy. Jean-Paul's leaving. I can't look up. I can't meet her eye. Lissy, I'm sorry, I gabble. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I should never have... Your sex life is your own affair. Emma, we weren't having sex, you dope. You were. I saw you. You didn't have any clothes on. We did have clothes on. Emma, look at me. No, I say in panic. I don't want to look at you. Look at me. I raise my head, and gradually my eyes focus on Lissy standing in front of me. Oh, right. She's wearing a flesh-coloured leotard. Well, what were you doing if you weren't having sex? And why are you wearing that? We were dancing, says Lissy, looking embarrassed. Dancing? But why were you dancing? This makes no sense at all. I've joined this group, says Lissy after a pause. Oh my God, not a cult. No, not a cult. It's just... She bites her lip. It's some lawyers who've gotten together and formed a dance group. A dance group? For a few moments, I can't quite speak. Now that my shock's died down, I have this horrible feeling that I might possibly be about to laugh. You've joined a group of dancing lawyers? Yes, Lissy nods, looking abashed. I just, you know, I love the law. I love my job. But I've had this unfulfilled feeling for a while, like something was missing, like I wanted to express my creativity in some way. An image has popped into my head of a bunch of portly barristers dancing around in their wigs, and suddenly, I can't help it, I give a snort of laughter. You see? Cries Lissy. That's why I didn't tell you. I knew you'd laugh. I'm sorry, I say. I'm sorry. I'm not laughing. I think it's really great. Another hysterical giggle bursts from me. It's just, I don't know, somehow the idea of dancing lawyers. It's not funny, Lissy's saying. It's just a few like-minded professionals who want to express themselves through dance. What's wrong with that? I'm sorry, I say, wiping my eyes and trying to regain control of myself. Nothing's wrong with it. I think it's brilliant. So, are you having a show or anything? It's a week from Friday. That's why we've been doing extra practices. Really? I stare at her, my laughter melting away. Weren't you going to tell me? I hadn't decided,
she says, scuffing her dancing shoe on the floor. I was embarrassed.
Don't be embarrassed, I say in dismay. Lissy, I'm sorry I laughed. I think it's brilliant, and I'm going to come and watch.
I give her a curious look.
I never knew you could dance.
Oh, I can't, she says at once. I'm crap. It's just a bit of fun. Do you want a coffee?
As I follow Lissy into the kitchen, she gives me a raised eyebrow look.
So, you've got a bit of a nerve, accusing me of having sex. Where were you last night?
With Jack, I admit with a dreamy smile. Having sex. All night.
I knew it! Oh, God, Lissy. I'm completely in love with him.
In love? She flicks on the kettle. Emma, are you sure? You've only known him about 5 minutes.
That doesn't matter. We're already complete soulmates. There's no need to pretend with him or try to be something I'm not.
And the sex is amazing. He's everything I never had with Connor. Everything. And he's interested in me. You know, he asks me questions all the time, and he seems really genuinely fascinated by the answers.
I spread my arms with a blissful smile. You know, Lissy, all my life I had this feeling that something wonderful was about to happen to me. I always just knew it, deep down inside, and now it has.
So where is he now? Says Lissy, shaking coffee into the filter.
He's going away for a bit. He's going to brainstorm some new concept with the creative team.
What?
I don't know. He didn't say. It'll be really intense and he probably won't be able to phone me. But he's going to email every day, I add.
Lissy looks at me silently for a few moments. Emma, did Jack ever tell you why he had to go rushing off in the middle of the night that time?
No. But it's his business.
Did he ever tell you what all those phone calls were about on your first date?
Well, no.
Has he told you anything about himself, other than the bare minimum?
He's told me plenty, I say. Lissy, what's your problem?
I'm just wondering, is he sharing himself with you? She pours hot water onto the coffee. Or are you just sharing yourself with him?
We share with each other, I say, looking away and fiddling with a fridge magnet.
Like he told me all about his business partner and his company.
What about himself as a person?
Yes. Which is true, I tell myself. Jack shared loads about himself with me. I mean, he's told me all about... Well, anyway, he probably just hasn't been in the mood for talking very much. Is that a crime?
Have some coffee, says Lissy, handing me a mug.
Thanks. I know I sound grudging, and Lissy sighs.
Emma, I'm not trying to spoil things. He does seem really lovely.
He is.
Honestly, Lissy, you don't know what he's like. He's so romantic. Do you know what he said this morning?
He said the minute I started talking on that plane, he was gripped.
Really? He said that? That is pretty romantic.
I told you. I can't help beaming at her. Lissy, he's perfect.
For the next week or so, nothing can pierce my happiness. Nothing. Paul's sarcastic comments bounce off me like bubbles. I don't even notice when Artemis introduces me to a visiting advertising team as her personal assistant. They can all say what they like, because what they don't know is that when I'm smiling at my computer, it's because Jack has just sent me another funny little email. What they don't know is that the guy who employs them all is in love with me. Me! Emma Corrigan, the junior.
Well, of course, I had several in-depth conversations with Jack Harper on the subject, I can hear Artemis saying on the phone. Yup, and he felt, as I do, that the concept really needed to be refocused.
Bullshit. She never had any in-depth conversations with Jack Harper. She's not the only one.
everyone is dropping Jack Harper into their conversations, left, right and centre. It's like, now that he's gone, everyone's pretending they were his best friend and he thought their idea was perfect. Except me. I'm just keeping my head down and not mentioning his name at all. Partly because I know that if I do, I'll blush bright red or give some huge goofy smile or something. Partly because I have a horrible feeling that once I start talking about Jack, I won't be able to stop. But mainly because no one ever brings the subject up with me. After all, what would I know about Jack Harper? I'm only the crappy assistant. Hey, says Nick, looking up from his phone. Jack Harper's going to be on television. Okay, folks, says Paul, coming out of his office. Jack Harper's done an interview on Business Watch, and it's being broadcast at 12. A television is being set up in the conference room. Anyone who would like to can go along and watch there. But we need one person to stay behind and man the phones. His gaze falls on me. By 5 to 12, the office is completely empty. Apart from me, a fly, and a whirring fax machine. Disconsolately, I reach into my desk drawer and take out an Aero. And a flake, for good measure. I'm just unwrapping the Aero when the phone rings. Okay, says Lissy, I've set the video. Thanks, Liz. You're a star. Oh, and your dad rang. I feel a flicker of apprehension. What did he say? I haven't talked to Mum or Dad since the debacle at the corporate family day. He'd seen the trailer for the interview and wondered if he knew about it, and he said that he really wanted to talk to you about a few things. I gaze at my notepad. Anyway, he and your mum are going to be watching it, and your grandpa. Great. Just great. The entire world is watching Jack on television. The entire world except me. I take several messages for Paul, one for Nick and one for Caroline. I file a couple of letters. I address a couple of envelopes. And then, after 20 minutes, I've had it. This is stupid. I love Jack. He loves me. I should be there supporting him. I pick up my coffee and hurry along the corridor. The meeting room is crowded with people, but I edge in at the back and squeeze through two guys who aren't even watching Jack, but are discussing some football match. What are you doing here? Says Artemis as I arrive at her side. What about the phones? No taxation without representation, I hear myself responding, which perhaps isn't exactly appropriate. I'm not even sure what it means, but has the desired effect of shutting her up. I crane my neck so I can see over everyone's head, and my eyes focus on the screen. And suddenly, there he is, sitting on a chair in a studio, in jeans and a white t-shirt. There's a bright blue backdrop and the words Business Inspirations behind him, and two smart-looking interviewers sitting opposite him. There he is, the man I love. This is the first time I've seen him since we slept together, it occurs to me. But he looks as gorgeous as ever, his eyes all dark and glossy under the studio lights. Oh, God, I want to kiss him. Of course it was tough after Pete died, Jack's saying. It was tough for all of us. But recently, he pauses. Recently, my life has turned around, and I'm finding inspiration again. I'm enjoying it again. He has to be referring to me. He has to be. I've turned his life around. That's even more romantic than I was gripped. You've already expanded into the sports drinks market, the male interviewer is saying. Now I believe you're looking to expand into the women's market. I remember those people up in Jack's office. That's what the ovaries were for. This is quite exciting. A new venture. Can you give us any further details about that? The male interviewer is saying. Will this be a soft drink marketed at women? It's in the very early stages, says Jack. But we're planning an entire line. A drink, clothing, a fragrance. We have a strong creative vision. We're excited. So what's your target market this time? Asks the man, consulting his notes. Are you aiming at sportswomen? Not at all, says Jack. We're aiming at the girl on the street.
The girl on the street? The female interviewer sits up, looking slightly affronted. What's that supposed to mean? Who is this girl on the street?
She's 20-something, says Jack after a pause. She works in an office, takes the tube to work, goes out in the evenings, and comes home on the night bus. Just an ordinary, nothing special girl.
But the Panther brand has always been associated with men, chips in the woman, looking skeptical. With competition, with masculine values. Do you really think you can make the switch to the female market?
We've done research, says Jack. We feel we know our market.
Research? She gives a scoffing laugh. Isn't this just another case of men telling women what they want?
I don't believe so, says Jack, still pleasantly, but I can see a slight flicker of annoyance pass across his face.
Plenty of companies have tried to switch markets without success. How do you know you won't just be another one of them?
I'm confident, says Jack.
God, why is she being so aggressive? I think, feeling indignant. Of course Jack knows what he's doing. You round up a load of women in some focus group and ask them a few questions. How does that tell you anything?
That's only a small part of the picture, I can assure you, says Jack in even tones.
Oh, come on, the woman says, leaning back and folding her arms. Can a company like Panther, can a man like you, really tap into the psyche of, as you put it, an ordinary, nothing special girl?
Jack meets her gaze. I know this girl.
You know her?
I know who this girl is, says Jack. I know what her tastes are, what colors she likes. I know what she eats. I know what she drinks. I know what she wants out of life. She's size 8, but she'd like to be size 6. She...
He spreads his arms as though searching for inspiration.
She eats Cheerios for breakfast and dips flakes in her cappuccinos.
I look in surprise at my hand, holding a flake. I was about to dip it into my coffee. And I had Cheerios this morning.
We're surrounded these days by images of perfect glossy people, Jack is saying with animation. But this girl is real. She has bad hair days and good hair days. She wears G-strings, even though she finds them uncomfortable. She writes out exercise routines, then ignores them. She pretends to read business journals, but hides celebrity magazines inside them.
Just hang on a minute. This all sounds a bit familiar.
That's exactly what you do, Emma, says Artemis. I've seen your copy of OK inside Marketing Week.
She turns to me, and her gaze lands on my flake.
She loves clothes, but she's not a fashion victim, Jack is saying on screen. She'll wear, maybe, a pair of jeans.
Artemis's eyes run in disbelief over my Levi's, and a flower in her hair. Dazedly, I lift a hand and touch the fabric rose in my hair. He can't be talking about...
Oh my God, says Artemis.
What? Says Caroline next to her. She follows Artemis's gaze, and her expression changes. Oh my God, Emma, it's you! A few people start nudging one another and turning to look at me.
She reads 15 horoscopes every day and chooses the one she likes best.
It's you! It's exactly you!
She scans the back of highbrow books and pretends she's read them. I knew you hadn't read Great Expectations. She adores Sweet Sherry.
Sweet Sherry, says Nick, turning in horror. You cannot be serious.
It's Emma, I can hear people saying on the other side of the room. It's Emma Corrigan. Emma, says Katie, looking straight at me in disbelief. But...
It's not Emma,
says Connor, all of a sudden with a laugh. He's standing over on the other side of the room, leaning against the wall.
Don't be ridiculous. Emma's size 4 for a start, not size 8.
Size 4? Caroline giggles. That's a good one.
Aren't you size 4?
Connor looks startled.
But you said...
I...
I know I did. I swallow, my face like a furnace. But I was...
Do you really buy all your clothes from thrift shops and pretend they're new?
No, I say defensively. I mean, yes, maybe, sometimes.
She weighs 135 pounds, but pretends she weighs 125. Jack's voice is saying,
What? What? My entire body contracts in shock. I do not! I yell in outrage at the screen. I do not weigh anything like 135 pounds. I weigh about 128 and a half.
I trail off as the entire room turns to goggle at me.
Hate crochet.
There's an almighty gasp from across the room.
You hate crochet?
No, I say, swiveling in horror. That's wrong. I love crochet. You know I love crochet.
But Katie is stalking furiously out of the room. She cries when she hears the Carpenters. Jack's voice is saying on the screen. She loves ABBA, but she can't stand jazz.
Oh no. Oh no. Oh no.
Connor is staring at me as though I have personally driven a stake through his heart.
You can't stand jazz?
All my secrets. All my personal, private secrets revealed on television. I'm in such a state of shock, I'm not even taking them all in.
She wears lucky underwear on first dates. She borrows designer shoes from her roommate and passes them off as her own, confused about religion, worries that her breasts are too small.
I close my eyes, unable to hear it.
My breasts! He mentioned my breasts on television!
When she goes out, she can play sophisticated, but on her bed,
I'm suddenly faint with fear. No. No. Please not this. Please, please.
She has a Barbie bedspread.
A huge roar of laughter goes around the room, and I bury my face in my hands. I am beyond mortification. No one was supposed to know about my Barbie bedspread. No one.
Is she sexy? The interviewer is asking. I feel a stab of shock. I can't breathe for apprehension. What's he going to say?
She's very sexual, says Jack at once, and all eyes swivel toward me, agog.
This is a modern girl who carries condoms in her purse.
Every time I think this can't get any worse, it does. My mother is watching this. My mother.
But maybe she hasn't reached her full potential. Maybe there's a side of her that has been frustrated.
I can't look at Connor. I can't look anywhere.
Maybe she's willing to experiment. Maybe she's had, I don't know, a lesbian fantasy about her best friend.
No, no! My entire body clenches in horror. I have a sudden image of Lissy watching the screen at home, wide-eyed, clasping a hand over her mouth. She'll know it was her. She'll know. I will never be able to look her in the eye again.
She believes in love and romance. She believes her life is one day going to be transformed into something wonderful and exciting. She has hopes and fears and worries, just like anyone. Sometimes she feels frightened. He pauses and adds in a softer voice. Sometimes she feels unloved. Sometimes she feels she will never gain approval from those people who are most important to her.
As I watch Jack's warm, serious face on the screen, I suddenly feel my eyes stinging slightly.
But she's brave and good-hearted and faces her life head-on.
He shakes his head and smiles at the interviewer.
I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened there. I guess I got a little carried away. Could we...
His voice is abruptly cut off by the interviewer. Someone switches the television off. For a few seconds, the entire room is silent.
But I don't understand, comes a voice from across the room,
and everybody's head swivels avidly toward Connor, like at a tennis match. He's looking straight at me, his face red with confusion.
How does Jack Harper know so much about you?
Oh, God. I know Connor got a really good degree from Manchester University and everything, but sometimes he is so slow on the uptake.
Everyone's head has swiveled back toward me. My whole body is prickling with embarrassment. Because we...
I can't say it out loud. I just can't.
But I don't have to. Connor's face is slowly turning different colours.
No, he gulps. No, I don't believe it.
You're joking,
exclaims some guy in the corner, who is obviously even slower than Connor and has just had it spelled out to him, word for word. He looks up at me.
So how long has this been going on?
It's like someone opened the floodgates. Suddenly, everyone in the entire room starts pitching questions at me. I can't hear myself think for the babble.
Is that why he came to Britain? To see you? Are you going to marry him?
You know, you don't look like you weigh 135 pounds. Do you really have a Barbie bedspread?
So, in the lesbian fantasy, was it just the two of you, or...
Have you had sex with Jack Harper at the office?
Is that why you dumped Connor? I must get my bag and go now.
As I enter the empty marketing department, phones are shrilly ringing all around, and the habit's too ingrained. I can't ignore them.
Hello,
I say, picking up one at random.
So, she borrows designer shoes from her roommate and passes them off as her own. Whose shoes might those be then? Lissy's?
I put the phone down. As I zip up my bag with trembling hands, a couple of people have followed me into the office and are picking up some of the ringing phones.
You have a call from Harvey's Bristol Cream Publicity Department,
chimes in Caroline.
They want to know where they can send you a free case of sweet sherry.
How did they get my name? How? Has the word spread already? Are the women on reception telling everybody?
Emma, I have your dad here, says Nick. He says he needs to talk to you. Urgently.
I grab my jacket and practically run out of the office and down the corridor to the stairs. Everywhere, people are making their way back to their offices, and they all turn to gawk as I hurry by.
Emma.
As I'm nearing the stairs, a woman named Fiona, whom I barely know, grabs me by the arm. She weighs about 300 pounds and is always campaigning for bigger chairs and wider doorways.
Never be ashamed of your body. Rejoice in it. The Earth Mother has given it to you. If you want to come to our workshops on Saturday,
I tear my arm away and start clattering down the marble stairs. But as I reach the next floor, someone else grabs my arm.
Hey, can you tell me which charity shops you go to?
It's a girl I don't recognize, because you always look really well dressed to me.
I adore Barbie dolls too.
Carol Finch from Accounts is suddenly in my path.
Shall we start a little club together, Emma?
I didn't realise I was a lesbian till I was 33.
A lot of people are confused about religion. This is a leaflet about our Bible study group. I sprint for the entrance, the voices following me, echoing on the marble floor. As I'm desperately pushing against the heavy glass doors, Dave, the security guard, saunters up and stares right at my breasts.
They look all right to me, love.
As I reach the corner near our house, I stop, blow my nose, and take a few deep breaths, trying to calm my nerves. How am I going to face Lissy after what Jack said on television? How? I open the front door of the flat, and there she is, coming out of the kitchen into the hall. And as she looks at me, I can already see it in her face. She's completely freaked out.
Oh, she says, staring at the floor. Gosh, hi, Emma.
Hi, I reply in a strangled voice. I thought I'd come home. The office was just too awful. I trail off, and there's the most excruciating, prickling silence.
So, I guess you saw it. I say at last.
Yes, I saw it. And I just wanted to say that
that if you want me to move out, then I will. After 21 years, our friendship is over. One tiny secret comes out, and that's the end of everything. It's okay, I say, trying not to burst into tears. I'll move out. I feel terrible. She looks stricken. I just never realized you had those kind of feelings.
I don't.
But I can see it all now. I've been walking around half-dressed. No wonder you were frustrated.
Lissy, I wasn't frustrated, I say. I'm not a lesbian.
Emma, please. Lissy grabs my hand. Don't be ashamed of your sexuality. And I promise, I'll support you 100%, whatever choice you decide to make.
Lissy, I don't need support. I just had one dream, okay? It wasn't a fantasy. It was just a weird dream, which I didn't intend to have, and it doesn't mean I'm a lesbian, and it doesn't mean I fancy you, and it doesn't mean anything.
Oh.
There's silence. Lissy looks taken aback.
Oh, right. I thought it was a, you know.
She clears her throat.
That you wanted to...
No. I just had a dream, just one stupid dream.
Oh, right.
Look, can we just leave the subject? My day has been embarrassing enough already.
Oh, God, yes, says Lissy. Sorry, Emma, you must be feeling really...
It was awful. I close my eyes as fresh mortification washes over me. I have never felt more exposed. The whole world knows I find G-strings uncomfortable, and I've never read Dickens. My voice is wobbling more and more, and suddenly I begin to sob.
Oh, God, Lissy, you were right. I feel such a complete fool. He was just using me right from the beginning. He was never really interested in me. I was just a market research project.
You don't know that.
I do. Of course I do. That's why he was gripped. That's why he was so fascinated by everything I said. It wasn't because he loved me. It was because he realized he had his target customer right next to him. The kind of normal, ordinary girl on the street he wouldn't normally give the time of day to. I mean, he said it on television, didn't he? I'm just a nothing special girl.
You're not. You are not nothing special.
I am. That's exactly what I am. I'm just an ordinary nothing. And I was so stupid, I believed it all. I honestly thought Jack loved me. I mean, maybe not exactly loved me.
I feel myself colour.
But, you know, felt about me like I felt about him.
I know. Lissy looks like she wants to cry herself.
I know you did.
Come on, you need a drink. We go onto the tiny overgrown balcony and sit in a patch of sun, drinking the brandy that Lissy got duty-free last year. Each sip makes my mouth burn unbearably, but 5 seconds later sends a lovely soothing warmth all over my body. Is that Emma? Jemima appears on the balcony in a white robe and a face mask, her eyes narrowed.
So, Miss I Never Borrow Your Clothes, what have you got to say about my Prada slingbacks?
Oh, God, there's no point lying about it, is there? They're really pointy and uncomfortable. She inhales sharply.
I knew it! I knew it all along. You do borrow my clothes. What about my Joseph jumper? What about my Gucci bag? Oh, shut up about your stupid things, says Lissy. Emma's really upset. She's been completely betrayed and humiliated by the man she thought loved her.
Well, surprise, surprise. Let me just faint with shock, says Jemima.
I could have told you that was going to happen. I did tell you. Never tell a man all about yourself. It's bound to lead to trouble. Did I not warn you?
You said she wouldn't get a rock on her finger, exclaims Lissy. You didn't say he would pitch up on television telling the nation all her private secrets. You know, Jemima, you could be a bit more sympathetic.
No, Lissy, she's right, I say miserably. She was completely right all along. If I just kept my stupid mouth shut, then none of this would have happened. I reach for the brandy bottle and pour myself another glass. Relationships are a battle. They are a chess game. And what did I do? I just threw all my chess pieces down on the board at once and said, "Here, have them all." I take a gulp of my drink. "I couldn't agree more," says Jemima. "I'm planning to tell my future husband as little as possible." She breaks off as the cordless phone in her hand rings. She puts her hand over the receiver and looks at me wide-eyed. "It's Jack," she mouths. Somehow, I'd almost forgotten Jack existed in real life. All I can see is that face on the television screen, smiling and nodding, and slowly leading me to my humiliation. "Give it to me," I say, and grab the phone out of Jemima's hand. "Hi," I say. "Emma, it's me." I feel a rush of emotion that almost overwhelms me. I want to cry. I want to hit him, hurt him. But somehow, I keep control of myself. "I never want to speak to you again," I say, and switch off the phone. An instant later, it rings again. "Please, Emma," says Jack, "just listen for a moment. I know you must be very upset, but if you just give me a second to explain. Didn't you hear me? You used me and you humiliated me, and I never want to speak to you again, or see you, or hear you, or... taste you," puts in Jemima. "Or touch you again. Never, ever, ever." I switch off the phone, march inside, and yank the line out of the wall. Then with trembling hands, I get my mobile out of the bag, and just as it begins to ring, switch it off. "Now, Emma," says Jemima, examining one of her cuticles, "I don't want to rush you, but you know what you have to do, don't you?" "What?" "You have to get your revenge." She looks up and fixes me with a determined gaze. "You have to make him pay." "Oh, no." Lissy pulls a face. "Isn't revenge really undignified? Isn't it better just to walk away?" Jemima looks blank. "So, anyway," she says at last, turning back to me, "I'd be delighted to help. Revenge is actually quite a speciality of mine, though I say it myself." I avoid Lissy's eyes. "What did you have in mind?" "Scrape his car, shred his suits, sew fish inside his curtains and wait for them to rot." She reels off instantly, as though reciting poetry. "Did you learn that at finishing school?" says Lissy. "I'm being a feminist, actually," retorts Jemima. "We women have to stand up for our rights. One of Mummy's tips is chili oil. You somehow arrange to have sex with the chap again, and then you say, 'How about a little massage oil?' and you rub it into his, you know." Her eyes sparkle. "That'll hurt him where it counts." "Your mother told you this," says Lissy. "What is your problem, Lissy? Do you think you should just let men walk all over you and get away with it? Great blow for feminism." "I'm not saying that," says Lissy. "I just wouldn't get my revenge with chili oil." "Well, what would you do then, clever clogs?" says Jemima, putting her hands on her hips. "Okay," says Lissy. "If I were going to stoop so low as to get my revenge, which I never would, because personally I think it's a huge mistake." She pauses for breath. "I'd do exactly what he did. I'd expose one of his secrets." "Actually, that's rather good," says Jemima. "But I don't know any of his secrets," I say. "You must," says Jemima. "I don't. Lissy, you had it right all along. Our relationship was completely one-sided. I shared all my secrets with him. But he didn't share any of his with me. He didn't tell me anything." "You must know something," says Jemima. "You slept with him, for goodness sake. He must have some secret, some weak point. Anything at all. Think back." I close my eyes and cast my mind back, but my mind's swirling a bit from all that brandy. Secrets. Jack's secrets. Think back. Scotland. I open my eyes, feeling a tingle of exhilaration. I do know one of his secrets.
What? Says Jemima. Have you remembered something?
I stop, feeling torn. I did make a promise to Jack. But then,
so what? So bloody what? My chest swells in emotion again. Why on earth am I keeping any stupid promise to him? It's not like he kept my secrets to himself, is it?
He was in Scotland, I say. The first time we met after the plane, he asked me to keep it a secret that he was in Scotland.
Why did he do that? Says Lissy.
I don't know. What was he doing in Scotland? Puts in Jemima.
I don't know.
There's a pause.
Says Jemima kindly. It's not the most embarrassing secret in the world, is it?
Well, then, you'll have to make something up. A bleeper goes off in her pocket. Time for my foot bath. She disappears back into the house. Lissy shakes her head.
She's nuts, she says. Totally nuts. Emma, you're not going to make anything up about Jack Harper.
I won't make anything up, I say. Who do you think I am? Anyway, I stare into my brandy, feeling my exhilaration fade away. Who am I kidding? I could never get my revenge on Jack. I could never hurt him. He doesn't have any weak points. He's a huge, powerful millionaire. I take a miserable slug of my drink. And I'm a nothing special, crappy, ordinary nothing.
It's one of those amazingly bright, crisp mornings that makes you feel like London really is the best city in the world. The sun is glinting off the river and the windows of office blocks, and the dome of St. Paul's looks like a picture postcard against the blue sky. And as I stride along from the tube station, my spirits can't help rising a little. Maybe everyone at work will already have forgotten about the whole thing. I mean, it wasn't that interesting. Surely some other piece of gossip will have come along in the meantime. Surely everyone will be talking about football or politics or something.
Exactly. I arrive at the Panther Building, push open the glass doors to the foyer, and walk in, my head held high.
A Barbie bedspread!
I immediately hear from across the marble.
Shagging Jack Harper all along, comes a voice from above me.
It's Connor I feel sorry for.
Pretended she loved jazz.
My optimism dies away, and I consider running away and spending the rest of my life under the duvet. But I have to face them. I have to do this. Clenching my fists at my sides, I slowly make my way up the stairs and along the corridor to the marketing department. Everyone I pass either blatantly goggles at me or pretends they're not looking, and at least five conversations are hastily broken off as I approach. As I reach the door to the marketing department, I take a deep breath, then walk in, trying to look as unconcerned as possible.
Hi, everyone, I say, taking off my jacket and hanging it on my chair.
Emma, exclaims Artemis. Well, I never.
Good morning, Emma,
says Paul, coming out of his office and giving me an appraising look.
You okay?
Fine, thanks.
Anything you'd like to talk about?
To my surprise, he looks like he genuinely means it.
No, I say, my face prickling. Thanks, but I'm okay.
All right then, carry on. And the rest of you?
Paul looks around the office as though in warning.
Remember what I said.
Of course, says Artemis at once. We all remember. Paul disappears into his office again, and I focus rigidly on my computer as it warms up. It'll be fine, I tell myself. I'll just concentrate on my work, immerse myself. Suddenly, I become aware that someone's humming a tune quite loudly. It's something I recognize. It's the Carpenters. And now a few others around the room are joining in on the chorus. Close to you.
All right, Emma, says Nick. Do you want a hanky?
As calmly as possible, I click onto my emails and give a small gasp of shock.
I normally get about 10 emails every morning, if that. Today I have 95. I scroll down the endless list and suddenly feel a stabbing in my heart. There are 3 from Jack. My hand hovers over my mouse. Does he deserve at least a chance to explain? Oh, Emma, says Artemis, coming over to my desk with a carrier bag. I've got this jumper. I wondered if you'd like. It's a bit small for me, but it's very nice, and it should fit you because... She pauses and catches Caroline's eye. It's a size 4. Both of them erupt into hysterical giggles. I'm off for a coffee, says Fergus, standing up. Anybody want anything? Make mine a Harvey's Bristol Cream, says Nick. Oh, Emma, I meant to say, Nick adds. The new secretary and admin. Have you seen her? She's quite something, isn't she? He winks at me, and I stare at him blankly for a moment, not understanding. Nice spiky haircut. Nice dungarees. Shut up! I cry, my face flaming red. Just fuck off, all of you! My hand trembling with anger, I swiftly delete each and every one of Jack's emails. He doesn't deserve anything. No chance, nothing. I rise to my feet and stride out. I head for the ladies' room, slam the door behind me, and rest my hot forehead on the mirror. Hatred for Jack Harper is bubbling through me like hot lava. Does he have any idea what I'm going through? Does he have any idea what he's done to me? Emma! Katie is standing right behind me, holding her makeup bag. Her face is reflected in the mirror next to mine, and she isn't smiling. It's just like Fatal Attraction. So, you don't like crochet? Oh, God. What have I done? Have I unleashed the bunny boiler side of Katie that no one's ever seen before? Maybe she'll impale me with a crochet needle, I find myself thinking wildly. Katie, I say, Katie, please listen. I never said, Emma, don't even try. She lifts her hand. There's no point. We both know the truth. He was wrong, I say. He got confused. I mean, I don't like, creches. You know, all those babies everywhere. Katie cuts me off with an odd smile. You know, I was pretty upset yesterday. But after work, I went straight home and I called my mum. And do you know what she said to me?
What?
She said, she doesn't like crochet either.
What?
And neither does my granny. Her face flushes, and suddenly she looks like the old Katie again. Or any of my relatives. They've all been pretending for years, just like you. It all makes sense now. Her voice rises in agitation. You know, I made my granny a whole sofa cover last Christmas, and she told me that burglars had stolen it. But I mean, what kind of burglars steal a crochet sofa cover?
Katie, I don't know what to say.
Emma, why couldn't you have told me before? All that time, making stupid presents that people didn't want.
Oh, God, Katie, I'm sorry, I say, filled with remorse. I'm so sorry. I just didn't want to hurt you.
I know you were trying to be kind, but I feel really stupid now.
Yes, well, that makes 2 of us, I say.
Oh, God, my eyes are tearing up. Are you okay, Emma? Says Katie. Here, have a tissue.
She rummages in her makeup bag.
And some eye gel.
Thanks, I say, and swallow hard. I dab the eye gel on my eyes and force myself to breathe deeply until I'm completely calm again.
I think you're really brave, says Katie, watching me. In fact, I'm amazed you even came in today. I would have been far too embarrassed.
Katie, I say, turning to face her. Yesterday, I had all my most personal, private secrets broadcast on TV. I spread my arms. How could anything possibly be more embarrassing than that?
Here she is,
comes a ringing voice behind us, and Caroline bursts into the ladies.
Emma, your parents are here to see you.
This is completely surreal. It's the middle of the morning. I should be at work. And instead, I'm walking down the street with my parents, wondering what on earth we're going to say to one another. I can't even remember the last time it was just my parents and me. Just the three of us. No grandpa, no Kerry, no Nev. It's like we've gone back in time 15 years. We could go in here, I say, as we reach an Italian coffee shop.
Good idea, says Dad, and pushes the door open.
We saw your friend Jack Harper on television yesterday. He's not my friend, I reply, and he and Mum glance at each other. We sit down at a wooden table, and a waiter brings us each a menu.
I want a normal cup of coffee, says Dad, peering at the menu with a frown. Do they do such a thing?
If they don't, you'll have to have a cappuccino and spoon off the froth, says Mum, or an espresso, and just ask them to add hot water. They have driven 200 miles. Are we just going to sit here and talk about hot beverages all day? Oh, and that reminds me, adds Mum. We've bought you a little something, Emma. Didn't we, Brian?
Oh, right, I say in surprise. What is it?
It's a car, says Mum, and looks up at the waiter who's appeared at our table. Hello, I would like a cappuccino. My husband would like a filter coffee, if that's possible. And Emma would like...
A car?
Car? Echoes the Italian waiter and gives me a suspicious look. You want coffee?
I'd like a cappuccino, please.
And a selection of cakes, adds Mum.
Grazie.
Mum? I put a hand to my head as the waiter disappears. What do you mean, you've bought me a car?
Just a little runaround. You ought to have a car. It's not safe you're travelling on all these buses.
But I can't afford a car, I say. I can't even... What about the money I owe you? What about...
Forget the money, says Dad. We're going to wipe the slate clean.
What? But we can't do that. I still owe you.
Forget the money, says Dad. I want you to forget all about it, Emma. You don't owe us anything. Nothing at all.
I honestly cannot take all this in. I look from Dad to Mum, then back to Dad, then very slowly back to Mum again. And it's really strange. But it almost feels as though we're seeing one another properly for the first time in years. As though we're seeing one another and saying hello, and kind of starting again.
We were wondering what you thought about taking a little holiday next year, says Mum. With us.
Just us, I say, looking around the table.
Just the three of us, we thought. It might be fun. You don't have to, of course, if you've got other plans.
No, I'd like to, I say. I really would, but what about...
I can't even bring myself to say Kerry's name. There's a tiny silence, during which Mum and Dad look at each other, and then away again.
Kerry sends a love, of course, says Mum, as though she's changing the subject completely.
She clears her throat.
You know, she thought she might visit Hong Kong next year, visit her father. She hasn't seen him for at least 5 years, and maybe it's time they... had some time together.
Right, I say. Good idea.
I can't believe this. Everything's changed. It's like the entire family has been thrown up in the air and has fallen down in different positions, and nothing's like it was before.
We feel, Emma, says Dad, and stops. We feel that perhaps we haven't been... that perhaps we haven't always noticed...
He breaks off and rubs his nose vigorously.
Cappuccino, says the waiter, planting a cup in front of me. Filter coffee. Cappuccino, coffee cake, lemon cake, chocolate.
Thank you, interrupts Mum. Thank you so much. I think we can manage from here.
The waiter disappears again, and she looks at me. Emma, what we want to say is, we're very proud of you.
Oh, God, I think I'm going to cry.
And we... Dad begins. That is to say, we both... Your mother and I... He clears his throat. We've always... And always will. Both of us.
He pauses, breathing rather hard. I don't quite dare say anything.
What I'm trying to say, Emma, he starts again, as I'm sure we all, which is to say, he stops again and wipes his perspiring face with a napkin. The fact of the matter is that,
oh, just tell your daughter you love her, Brian, for once in your bloody life, cries Mum.
I love you, Emma, says Dad in a choked up voice.
Oh, Jesus. He brushes roughly at his eye. I love you too, Dad, I say, my throat tight. And you, Mum.
You see, says Mum, dabbing at her eye. I knew it wasn't a mistake to come.
She clutches hold of my hand, and I clutch hold of Dad's hand, and for a moment we're in a kind of awkward group hug. I release my hand and take a sip of cappuccino and look up. Jack is standing at the door of the coffee shop. I almost can't breathe as I see him through the glass doors. He puts out a hand, the door pings, and suddenly he's inside the coffee shop. As he walks toward our table, I feel my facade begin to crumble. This is the man I thought I was in love with. This is the man who completely used me. Now that the initial shock has faded, all the feelings of pain and humiliation are threatening to take over and turn me to jelly again. But I'm not going to let them. I'm going to be strong and dignified. Ignore him, I say to Mum and Dad. Emma, I want to talk to you, says Jack.
Well, I don't want to talk to you.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, he glances at Mum and Dad. If we could just have a moment.
I'm not going anywhere, I say in outrage. I'm having a nice cup of coffee with my parents.
Please. He sits down at an adjoining table. I want to explain. I want to apologize.
There's no explanation you could possibly give me.
I look fiercely at Mum and Dad.
Pretend he isn't there. Just carry on.
There's silence. Mum and Dad are giving each other surreptitious looks, and I can see Mum mouthing something.
Dear me, says Mum in a stagey voice. Just look at the time. We're due at the sculpture exhibition.
What?
Lovely to see you, Emma. You can't go.
But Dad's already opening his wallet and putting a £20 note on the table, while Mum stands up and puts on her navy jacket.
Just listen to him,
she whispers, bending down to give me a kiss.
Bye, Emma, says Dad, and squeezes my hand.
And within the space of about 30 seconds, they're gone.
I cannot believe they've done this to me.
So, says Jack, as the door pings shut. With a set jaw, I shift my chair around so I can't see him. Emma, please. I shift my chair around again with even more determination until I'm facing the wall. The only thing is, now I can't reach my cappuccino. Here. I look around to see Jack has moved his chair right up next to mine, and he's holding out my cup to me.
Leave me alone, I say, leaping to my feet. We have nothing to talk about, nothing.
I grab my bag and stalk out of the coffee shop into the busy street. A moment later, I feel a hand on my shoulder.
We could at least discuss what happened.
Discuss what?
I wheel around.
How you used me? How you betrayed me?
Okay, Emma. I appreciate I embarrassed you. But is it really such a big deal?
Such a big deal? You came into my life. You fed me this huge, amazing romance. You made me fall in love. You said you were gripped by me. You made me care for you. And I believed every single word.
My voice has a treacherous wobble.
I believed you, Jack. But all the way along, you had an ulterior motive. You were just using me for your stupid research. All the time, you were just using me.
Jack looks horrified.
No, he
he says. No, wait, you have this wrong. He grabs my arm. That's not the way it was. I didn't set out to use you.
Of course you did,
I say, wrenching my arm out of his grasp, jabbing the button at a pedestrian crossing.
Of course you did. Don't deny it was me you were talking about in that interview. Don't deny you had me in mind. Every detail was me. Every bloody detail.
Okay. Okay. Listen. I don't deny I had you in mind. I don't deny you filtered into... But that doesn't mean... He looks up. I have you on my mind most of the time. That's the truth. I have you on my mind.